Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Mary Schmeek in the Chicago Tribune yesterday had a page one story that began this way. The night the madness ended, Matthew McFarland had decided that he needed just a little more crack to carry him through until morning. He had plenty of heroin in the small suburban condo he shared with his mother and his fiancée, Amy, but he wanted cocaine, which requires a quick trip to the nearby village of Ford Heights. No, said Amy when he asked her to drive. They were in their bedroom, where he did drugs out of view of his mother, who knew but could not stand to watch. McFarland was surprised by Amy's response. So was she, wrote Mary Schmeek in the beginning of a what would be, if you printed it out, 14-page story. My goodness, Mary Schmeek, what
Don't
a story.
Don't deter people, John.
Oh, that's right. It's like 2 pages. It's a quick read.
Easily.
I couldn't stop reading. And frankly, when I got to the end, in fact, when I turned it the final page in the Tribune last night, I realized there was still a lot of story to tell, but I thought, oh, I want to know more. I don't think it was too long. If anything, it was too short. There are so many angles to this story. But at the end of the day, it's the story of Matt, who is addicted to drugs and how it affected him and his family, including his stint in jail and what's happened to him since. Thank you for doing that. If you do not subscribe to a newspaper already, today would be a good day to start just to read this. How did you first discover this story? How did you discover Matt?
I got an email from someone who works for Judge Timothy Evans, who's the chief judge of the Cook County Circuit Court. And, you know, he said we have a success story out of our drug court, and maybe you'd be interested in this for a column. And it took us a few weeks to kind of work through that. And I said, well, you know, I would like to know more about who this person is. And so he wrote me a little bit more about Matthew, and I could see just from what he wrote that Matthew had a very complicated, fascinating life story. I was still thinking that it was going to be like a 750-word column. And then I went to meet Matthew and Judge Ramon Ocasio, who was the drug court judge, out in the Maywood courthouse, and turned out that his mother, that Matthew's mother and fiance showed up as well. And we sat there for 2.5 hours as Matthew told me his story, his travels through drugs in Chicago. And, you know, the mom, Bev, talked, and Amy talked, and the judge talked. And then I realized, oh, this is so much more than this 2.5 hours, so much more.
And it's a story that, if you have not read it, you might imagine, okay, he's in and out of drugs, it affects the family, et cetera. Yes to all of that. I think it's a particularly poignant story because of their circumstances. Your story is unique to you, and everybody has a unique story. But I think a lot of people can relate. I think
right.
There's a lot of families that are living a version of this, and we all know them. And it's just tragic. And it usually ends differently than this one, too, I might add.
Right. I mean, the emails that I've been getting are so many of them from families who say, yes, we've had to deal with this. You know, my brother, my father, my cousin.
So Matt is in our studio. Matt, welcome to the studio, and just welcome in general. What a story.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
You read the story. What was your reaction?
Well, I'll tell you, there was a lot leading up to the story. There was a lot of interviewing. I believe it went on for about 3 months. I didn't know it was going to be as revealing. I'm going through what I've later found that they call in one of the 12-step support groups for friends and families of people like myself, a vulnerability hangover. And I knew the day that Mary said, hey, is there any way you could take us to the west side to see where you used to do what you used to do, that this thing was going to be a little deeper. I didn't know how deep it was going to actually be on paper until I actually really saw it in print, which was the early edition on Saturday. I made sure to run out.
You went out and got the Sunday paper early.
But,
yes.
You know, I did go through everything
yes.
with you,
yes.
Matthew, because yes. it felt important to me that he and his mom and Amy all know what was going to be in public, because they had no obligation to speak to me, none whatsoever. I mean, this was a gift, right? To tell this story and to tell it true, for them to tell it as truly as they did to me. This is a gift to anyone who is trying to understand what drug addiction looks like, what drugs in Chicago look like. So, you know, I just wanted to discuss with him. And I have to say, Matthew, I am just, it's very brave to put yourself out that way. And, you know, at one point, I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, I told you that. You know, I knew you were nervous. You were nervous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said the truth is in the details. And it's true. It is. The truth is in the details. Mm-hmm. And I told you that qualified you for a journalism degree.
To either teach or be a student, right?
But it's hard. I mean, you didn't have to say all that stuff.
Well, let me ask the two of you this, and Mary, maybe you should take the lead just for brevity's sake, but for the people who didn't read the story, give me the condensed version of what you wrote.
Well, Matthew started dabbling in doing drugs when he was very young.
16, you were doing heroin, right, with your uncle?
Well, I was stealing pills from my father, who was a pharmaceutical salesman at the age of 9, actually. I was really a young boy.
Were you consuming drugs at 9?
I was. I was experimenting.
Yeah,
so I was very much experimenting, like the colors, as the article talks about it. They looked like candy, all the different colors of the rainbow. To me, I felt like I had came across a bag of Skittles, which seemed to be very important to my dad and some of his colleagues at the time. So,
but then, you know, from the age of 9 on, 13 stealing Valium from his grandfather, 16 doing heroin and coke with his uncle. And by the time he was in his 20s, he was, you know, out on the South Side in squalid buildings and with homeless people and, you know, just doing drugs all the time. And
supported by your mom all the time.
Supported, my mother, you know, her intention was to help, and I think a lot of parents and families of people that are addicted are just trying to help, and they don't know the best way to help. So it's a
very
complex.
She didn't want to abandon you. She felt you were the underdog compared to your brother. She could relate a little bit personally, and so she was always trying to help you out of your circumstances. In retrospect, did you and your mom talk about this and say, Mom, you should have cut me off sooner? I know what she would probably say. I would afraid you would have gotten killed if I hadn't continued to bail you out or take you in. But what's that conversation go like now?
Well, I think that you have to look at it through the lens of somebody who has a son or a daughter who's struggling with that. And certainly from my mother's lens, it was what she had always told other people, because she continually got that advice, right? Cut them off, kick them out, throw them out. But when it's your son, right, it changes it. It changes the dynamic substantially. And so my mother just, you know, would reply to those individuals, well, if it was your son or daughter, what would you do?
Yeah, she suffered a lot. You know, there was the suffering that she felt of watching what was happening to you, the social stigma involved in trying to help you. But then, you know, at some point, and then things got very, 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 very bad, and you wound up in prison.
Correct.
And in prison, you got clean.
I did.
And then you were clean for 8 years.
I was.
For 8 years, and then what happens?
Well, then there was the paradigm. It was a kind of like a three things kind of came together. My father died. The mother of my daughter had a relapse and disappeared out of my life. I couldn't get a hold of her, didn't know where my daughter was. I was diagnosed with hepatitis C, had pretty bad liver damage, and so I started treating myself for that disease via interferon, I believe it's called. And I used to have to give myself shots in the leg. And I
was really mad at the doctor for prescribing that.
Yeah, I went
it's the Xanax.
It's the Xanax, actually. I went to the doctor. See, the crazy thing about this whole disease concept is that it doesn't matter, right? We have a physical allergy to mind and mood-altering substances, and whether it's prescribed by a doctor, right, wearing a lab coat, or whether it's given to you by some guy on the streets, your body reacts to it the same way. And so when the doctor prescribed me Xanax.
So you went to a doctor. You had these things converge in your life, and you really felt like you were on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Correct. I was.
So you went to the doctor.
Yes.
And he prescribed Xanax.
He prescribed me.
And he knew, though, that you were an ex-junkie, right?
He did, yes. In fact, I remember actually getting into an argument with him about it and saying, you know, I don't think Xanax is a real smart idea. And in fact, I argued with him about another medication, and he said that you have to give me a benzodiazepine, can we make it something that's less addictive? And he argued with me, and I remember him looking at me saying, "I'm the doctor here. Let me make these decisions." And so I left the doctor's office literally with a prescription for Xanax, and ironically the Walgreens was right directly across the street, and so I left the doctor's office, got in my car, drove directly across the street to the Walgreens, and as the story says, it was kind of crazy how the mind fools itself into thinking, hey, the doctor gave me this, maybe it's okay.
Well, you had a great line. You said you made a conscious but not rational decision.
Correct.
Well, you took this knowing yeah. even as you did it, as you swallowed, yeah. that you were really a word we can't print.
Right.
Yeah.
You screwed up.
Right.
But you know, I when I read that, I thought, okay, because you took the two pills and you don't know if now you're going to get re-addicted. But it almost, didn't you end up consuming the whole bottle right then and there?
I did. And by the time I
got out. In the parking lot at Walgreens.
No, I actually, after I took the two pills, I walked around the aisles for a little bit thinking how screwed I kind of was for that decision and what a bad decision it was, and I ended up just taking the whole bottle because the doom and gloom set in right away. I'm in trouble now.
Thinking, 8 years of sobriety gone in the aisles of a Walgreens.
In the aisles of a Walgreens, yeah. And not just that, but 8 years. When you say 8 years of sobriety, it's more than just abstinence. It's the, you know, it's the employment, the career you built up.
Yeah, so you built
family,
a very successful life.
Yeah.
So what happens? So then you were high the next day and the next day and the next day?
I stayed high literally from that point. I did not draw a sober breath except for the occasion, well, not actually more than occasional instances where I was in and out of jail, which got to be pretty routine. But I didn't, and when I was out of jail, I didn't draw a sober breath literally until December 9th, which was my first day of continuous.
So how sobriety. Many years was that then from that moment?
It would have been at least about 3 years.
Three.
Yeah, about 3 years.
Fast forward then to how did you get out of that spiral?
Well, you know, I think it was a unique combination of the criminal justice system, treatment interventions, you know, and employment opportunities with my current employer that kind of gave the holistic, because. You know, I was telling Mary, I said, you know, there's a lot of people that get their parts right? I mean, there's a criminal justice system, I think, that certainly has its place. The clinical interventions, the treatment that people provide, I think, has its place. But I think all too often we overlook the importance of employment, because I remember as I was going through that drug court scenario, my biggest worry was, you know, this is great. I got, you know, while I got the support, what do I do when it's over? What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And the answer came in the form of employment and finding a purpose, you know, a reason to get up in the morning.
I was in reading the story. So Matthew McFarland is in our studio along with Mary Schmeek. Mary wrote Matthew's story in the Chicago Tribune yesterday, Matt versus the Monster. What an apt title. An Addict's Unlikely Redemption.
The monster being addiction, right? I mean, that comes from a quote in the story from the drug court judge that Matthew appeared in front of. You know, he said that when he first saw Matthew, he thought he could be, you know, he could see his intelligence, he could see his capacities if he could only get rid of the monster called addiction.
And that was the thing that there's so many tragic moments in the story, and then there's some that I just go, yes, yes. And one was, I did not realize that the courts, the bureaucracy, could be as sympathetic and smart as it came across to me. Mary, I didn't know there was a sort of an effort to help these people reclaim. I just thought we were throwing the key away on some folks.
No, there's a system of problem-solving courts within the Cook County system. And there's one for drug court, there's mental health court, and there's veterans court. And the whole idea is that when you take nonviolent offenders who, you know, have gotten into the prison or the jail system because of something that involves mental health, that involves, I don't actually know how the veterans court works, but involves drug possession, that, you know, there's got to be a better way of dealing with them. It costs, I never put this in the story, but I meant to, it costs like $24,000 to keep someone incarcerated for a year. So why not help them get clean and
right.
then help them go back out into the world? You know, with the understanding, you know, I've received a couple of emails that make, I think, a fair point.
Hold on right there.
Yeah.
Finish that thought in a minute. Matthew, stay right there too. It's 2:22. Yeah, I am interested in the reaction to this story. I'll bet it's been pronounced. Coming up here on WGN. Mary Schmeek's Sunday page one story in the Chicago Tribune was titled Matt Versus the Monster, An Addict's Unlikely Redemption. It's the story of Matthew McFarland in our studio. Mary, we were talking, both of you. Matt, I appreciate you being here. We've got just a minute or two left, Mary, but we were talking about the response. Maybe both of you could respond to that. What have you been reading? You were talking about some email, right?
Well, I mean, I'd say most of my email has been either from people who have a family member who is struggling with addiction. I had a few from people who say, you know, I'm an addict myself, and I love this story because that's my life. It feels real. I feel like there are a lot of stories about addiction out there that never really address the full spectrum of everything, and that's partly what Matthew and I were trying to get at with this. You know, I've heard from a couple people who say they don't believe in 12-step programs and that this seemed to promote the idea of 12-step programs when 12-step programs don't work. The point of my story was not really to get into what works and what doesn't. It was to tell this story about Matthew McFarland, who, you know, has been clean for almost 2 years now. And Matthew, you know as well as anyone, you were just saying, this is day by day, day by day, it's every day for the rest of your life.
Yeah. When your eyes open up in the morning, do you think, okay, I got to go to battle again, or is it easier now?
It's easier not to know that I'm not behind the wheel driving the car, right? I mean, so as I said in the story in the interview, that an addict alone is in bad company. So I keep surrounded by people with long-term sobriety that are working good programs. And I will say this, is that 12-step programs don't have the monopoly on recovery. They certainly don't. You know, the only thing I would suggest to anybody is get in where you can, right? Whatever does work for you. But I'll tell you what, one of the things that is needed, I think, is a critical component, is having a purpose, finding a purpose in life, whatever that is, a passion, be passionate, find something you want to do. For me, it was, you know, working with other people as I do in my job now. And some of the feedback I've gotten so far has been a lot of people asking some of the same questions that they asked Mary, but a lot of people asking for help and employment for people.
So just to clarify, I mean, before we go, I'd like to make it clear what Matthew's doing now, right?
Yeah, sure.
You're working at the Safer Foundation, which is a big Chicago not-for-profit that works to stabilize people once they've gotten out of prison. People with records, right? And so, you know, Matthew started there in a temp position when he got out of jail.
Right,
started
right.
in a temp position, worked himself up quickly to a job matching people with career jobs, with good jobs. And now he is helping with this new program that coordinates the specialty courts, the problem-solving courts out of the Cook County system, funneling people from those courts into Safer, where they're going to get help finding jobs. So they're not just, so you get clean in drug court, and then you're tossed back out into the world. So
That's where Safer intervenes. The unique thing about this situation is that as a result of my experience with the drug courts, as I was going back talking to my leadership team at Safer, telling them how badly it's needed, employment opportunities for people, they said, go engage them, find out. And so we were able to secure some funding, and we're using that funding now to engage the Circuit Court of Cook County, specifically the specialty courts or problem-solving courts. to address the situation, the same very one that I found myself in,
yeah.
to help people with career opportunities.
You said in the to us just now here on the radio, an addict alone is in bad company, and Mary mentions that in the very end of her writing about you. An addict alone is bad company. You're only as sick as your secrets. Stay sober and carry the message. Every morning after he makes his coffee and lights a cigarette, he kneels down next to the living room couch, puts his hands together, looks up and says, "Good morning, God," reporting for duty. And I just thought, oh, hooray for all of that. I'm so happy to meet you. Keep doing what you're doing, Matthew. And Mary, keep doing what you're doing. What a well-told story.
Thank you, John. Yeah. Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
And thanks to your mom.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. Hi, Amy out there.
I want to interview your mom and Amy. I'm so glad there was a picture of them in the paper, too, Mary, because you mentioned them a lot. They're a big part of your life. They're a big part of the story and for obvious reasons. And they look great. I saw them smiling in the picture. And you know, I hope that you all...
Can I add one last thing? There's a guy I mentioned in this story. His name's Ray. And he's actually... you know, I talked to him. I dropped off a newspaper, as I did this morning, to Judge Ocasio, and we embraced and had some good laughs about some of the past. But Ray starts a job through Safer actually tomorrow. And,
this was a guy that you used to do drugs with on the West Side.
And he's really excited. He starts a job tomorrow.
Ray is a great guy.
He is. He's working with Safer Foundation now. We got him a job, and he starts tomorrow, and he's really excited about that. And he was in tears, actually. When he heard about the opportunity and accepted it. So there is hope at the end of the road.
Yesterday's paper, Matt versus the Monster, and Addicts and Likely Redemption. Thank you both. It's 2:31 on WGN.